You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, for years you've heard Art Spander come on this show. Guy's been to like every Rose Bowl in history, every Masters in history, such a legend as a sports writer. We've brought him on over the years. Excited to bring his kid on the show, Debbie Spander, joining us, founder and CEO of Insight Sports, representing sports media and coaches and teaching the NIL experience at USC. Debbie Spander joining us. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on, John. And always good to be Art Spander's kid.
I know. I led with that.
even after all these years.
Can I ask you before we get into all the NIL stuff? Like, I have three daughters. What was that like to grow up with a dad who's a sports writer?
It was awesome. He started taking us to events, or my mom physically would take us to events he was covering when we were little. I mean, I remember running around Oakland Coliseum at Warriors games when I was like 3-4 years old. So it was just part of growing up. And if we wanted to see our dad, we had to go to the game to say hi at halftime. So I always really liked it and loved going to all the events I got taken to, like Final Fours and Super Bowls. And then I wrote for the Stanford Daily and decided to go to law school.
And then here you are back into sports. I mean, I think it's probably not accidental, is it?
No, it's not. I actually went to law school to have that background to get into the business side of sports.
Let's talk a little business. The story breaks yesterday, UNLV's quarterback, you know, verbal agreement, dispute over NIL funds. What were your immediate takeaways as a lawyer, as an agent, as a sports person? You know, how did you kind of view this initially, or maybe take us through your thinking as you look at this situation?
I mean, we're just in this really weird state now. So my thinking was not surprising. I'm sure there are others out there. You know, marketing NIL is legal thanks to Alston. NIL stands for name, image, and likeness, which is like your right of publicity. Because of the Alston case, the NCAA is allowing athletes to enter into agreements for their right of publicity, marketing deals, appearance deals, card deals, charity deals, but not be paid for going to the school. However, now you've got these collectives representing the schools, or not representing the schools, as the case may be, and promising athletes X amount of money to come to the school, but actually, since there's no pay for play, they're being paid for these marketing rights. So it's all convoluted. And of course, there's no written agreement, so it's tough to enforce it. But even some of these written agreements are tough to enforce because it's not really what it is. Is that confusing?
No, it isn't. And I think part of it is, I wonder how much the athletes understand state to state, you know, who can negotiate what can be in writing. You know, you teach a course at USC on the NIL experience, and when you get students in that class, I have to think, you know, you get various levels of understanding as it pertains to NIL, but, you know, do you just dive into the basics on day one and walk through everything, or how do you approach teaching athletes and students about NIL?
Well, I mean, what's the most interesting is, literally, it changes week to week. I mean, the area is evolving so rapidly. And now, of course, we're all waiting to see if there's going to be a house settlement or not going to be a house settlement, if there's going to be some $20 million plus pot of money that athletic departments will be able to distribute between athletes as they see fit, of course, or if the non-Power Four conferences are not going to sign on to it. And actually, Judge Claudia Wilkin isn't very happy with some of the language in it. And then we're back to square one, and we're still litigating all of this. So, I mean, the most interesting thing about NIL is that it literally changes all the time. But do try to kind of teach where it came from. And the very first thing, it's actually, I teach it with my husband, Mark Eisenberg. The very first thing we teach is that the word student athlete was coined by the NCAA to keep athletes in perpetual amateurism. The very first athletic event in the 1880s was a regatta up in Maine between, I believe it was Harvard and Yale or Princeton or something, and it was sponsored by the railroad companies and hotels to get people to vacation up there. So, I mean, since day one, there's been money paid to the NCAA and schools while the athletes have been excluded in the names of amateurism.
The, you know, I a lot of people will like to say, well, we need guardrails. You know, the NCAA needs guardrails. And but what do you, what's your response to that when people say, you know, this is why we need guardrails?
Well, we can have guardrails when it is actually acknowledged that the athletes should be collectively bargaining for their share of the revenues and they have representation to do so, whether it's individual lawyers or agents or, you know, kind of what I foresee happening if we do ever get to that stage is that maybe one of the existing players associations, the NFLPA or the NBPA, who are very great at negotiating collective bargaining agreements, will create a division to help college athletes as well.
We're talking to Debbie.
Until,
go ahead.
I was saying, until we get to that point, what kind of guardrails are they? Because we're living in kind of a false reality where there is no pay for play. I'm using quote marks in the air, but there really is collectives.
Give me an idea. If, you know, if, Debbie, if I said to you, hey, you know what, you're going to be the czar here. You're going to figure out, you're going to help us figure out a system that protects players and also maybe gets it a little under control. So we don't have people in the middle of the season feeling like they got a bad deal and they're leaving a school, or you don't have coaches who feel like this is ongoing. What kinds of things do we need to be thinking about?
Well, I think that the House settlement as proposed for the athlete side would actually be terrific, because it would, it's still being negotiated, but somewhere between $20 and $24 million a year would be paid by the athletic departments to the athletes they determine should be paid. Now, of course, that's a little bit of an issue, but then you're kind of getting the collectives, which aren't part of the university, out of the middle, and everything is enforceable. On the other side, I'd say it would be terrific if one entering into something like this, or whether it's just a flat revenue share deal from the monies coming in from media deals, ticket sales, sponsorships, that there is, you know, some collective bargaining agreement on behalf of the players. The other, you know, the other thing that's going on are the NLRB cases where they're taking it up to the National Labor Relations Board. So we got a lot of lawsuits and cases going on in this area right now, but we're still kind of in a gray area.
Debbie Spander is with us, the founder and CEO of Insight Sports. Teaches a class called the NIL Experience at USC as well. Let me ask you, you know, specifically with the case involving the UNLV quarterback, I'm looking at Matthew Sluka's agent and going, why wasn't something in writing? Is it wrong for me to kind of go, hey, look, this is lesson one for every other athlete out there. Don't take a promise. Make sure that you have representation. Make sure you have something in writing.
Well, I mean, he had representation. The question is, you know, what type of agent did he sign with? I don't know anything about this agent, but number one, yes, you want everything in writing. You want a written agreement between yourself and the collective or the marketing company or the charity, whatever is putting up the money, or else it's likely unenforceable. You know, a big problem is there's no standards for NIL agents, whereas a NFL agent, an NBA agent, MLB agent, they all have to be licensed by the unions and take exams. Anybody can hold themselves out as an NIL agent, and, you know, it's a little dicey out there. There's hundreds, if not thousands, of people saying I'm an NIL agent, and, you know, at some point, until there is a collective bargaining unit, you know, maybe you need to get a lawyer involved.
Yeah, I noticed that with some of the college players that I cover suddenly had people representing them, and I started to kind of go, well, who are these people? And I think part of the issue, maybe you know, you can speak to this, is initially there wasn't enough money in it to get like the right. long-term established agents involved. And it seemed to be, you know, it was an agent who had represented a UFC fighter or an agent who, you know, was kind of on the fringes of things. But it seems like now it's becoming a little more mainstream. Are you seeing that change?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all of the big sports agencies have NIL divisions. Wasserman, Clutch, CAA, WME, Excel, they all do have those divisions. And there are agencies who just do NIL who are also very reputable. But there's a, you know, kind of an in-between area as well.
Debbie, go ahead.
So I was going to say, and that's where parents need to get involved and help their children. I mean, you can't even legally sign a contract until you're 18. It's cancelable or unenforceable. So if you're, I mean, Matthew transferred, so he's obviously over 18. But if, you know, you're 17 and a senior in high school, you need help with this.
I'm thinking that, you know, fans are frustrated too. And fans are going, I hear a lot of people saying, hey, I'm all for players earning money, but shouldn't, you know, part of that collective bargaining be that if you sign an NIL deal, you have to stay at a school? What would you expect to be involved in a fair and honest discussion or a fair and honest collective bargaining session between players and the universities or the NCAA, whoever's on the other side of that table these days? You know, what kinds of parameters or points would be important to both sides?
Absolutely. I think, you know, getting rid of all of the transfer windows, not all of them, but some of them, there's a lot of transfer windows right now. And, you know, this may sound a little bit like an employment contract, but yes, you sign your letter of intent to attend a school and you're going to get X amount of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, and there can be a term on it as well. There's, you know, nothing illegal about signing a 2-year agreement or 3-year agreement and agreeing not to transfer.
I like that. And I, you know, because I do like to see players develop and grow, you know. And what I fear is we've got unrestricted free agency, and it feels like, you know, even the last 24 hours we've got, okay, couple of players basically saying, hey, you know what, I'm going to sit. And
yep.
I get it. You know, we're watching athletes that are, you know, figuring out, you know, how much power and how much influence they have and trying to figure it out. I really appreciate you joining us. And I guess before I let you go, I'd love for you to talk to us about, you know, maybe what you think the biggest misconception is in the public that would be important to speak to.
I mean, I think the biggest misconception is likely that if there is some sort of pay for play, that college sports as we know it is going to be over. That the money has been there for years, whether it was bags of cash or 20s or 100s handed by by boosters to players as they ran off the field, or FedExes of cash. And right now it's become the collective's pain. So the money has always been there. It's just if it's being distributed above board or below board. So I actually think college sports will be better if everything is negotiated and above board, and then we don't kind of need to worry about the gray area. College football, college basketball, volleyball, whatever you love, will still be competitive and fun to watch.
I love that. I appreciate your time. Appreciate what you're doing out there. Say hi to your dad for us. I know our listeners for years loved his stories. Did he tell those stories? Would he sit around the table and tell those stories, or was he only telling us those stories?
Sometimes. I think he told you guys and like his buddies in the press room more, but I'm actually trying to record some of them now. A friend of mine and I are doing kind of a video series recording some of these stories because they're priceless.
I got a treat for you because I probably had him on maybe 10 times, and they always went long. Those interviews always went long. You know what I'm talking about. And so
I know exactly.
And so I will send you the podcast links for those so you can
amazing, you can always
have those. Okay.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
All right. Wish you the best. I'm probably going to pick your brain at another point when more of this stuff comes up. But thank you, Debbie Spander. Appreciate you. Okay. Take care.
Very welcome, John. You're welcome.
There she goes. Steven, it's professional sports. We all know it. The schools can say they're student athletes. They can try all they want to say student athlete this, that. The athletes are in control. And I don't think they're going to cede control of college sports until the colleges come to the table and say, okay, we're going to give you employment contracts. We're going to give you, the ability to transfer in certain periods of time. In exchange, what we need is you only get to transfer during one portal window, one time a year. And if you sign one of these deals, they are binding employment contracts that leave you, tied to your university. You can't leave after four games. But I still will go back. Look, UNLV looks bad here. UNLV looks like they don't have any money. I guess they do today. Use some of that Pac-12 money. But UNLV doesn't look like they have any money. Doesn't look like the coaching staff and has it together. Did the assistant coach make a promise? Did the head coach make a promise? I've heard from so many people who have opinions on this. But I go back. My immediate thought was, well, this is an education. If somebody promises you something, get it in writing. Get it in writing. We wouldn't be here today. But I kind of wonder, I'm not even going to blame the kid. I kind of wonder who this agent was, who's representing him. But off the rails, Stephen, what do you make of that conversation with Debbie Spander?
Yeah, it is fascinating because, I think we can all agree, and even me, I've always been a proponent of college athletics is different than the pros, but I've never been like saying they shouldn't get paid or they shouldn't get compensated for it. It should just be in a different way. And now it is turning into, and the guests made this perfectly clear, like, they're going to go and get their money that they deserve. And now she says, this is the part that I worry about, John. She says, don't worry about it. She said, don't worry about it. Once this all gets done, it's out in the open. We're going to love college sports again. It's going to be great again. I don't know that I buy that because I think it's going to turn into more of a professional level. In the year 2030, are we looking at if football breaks off by itself, are they affiliated with the schools? Like, I think that's what always brings me to what makes college sports great is that it's the alumni, it's the schools, it's the rivalries. I don't want it to be a AAA football league. If it's just the Oregon Ducks, not the University of Oregon Ducks, is it different? I think it is. And so that goes back to like the Pac-12 and how I want them to get Gonzaga and St. Mary's and Grand Canyon, because I don't know that college basketball breaks off from the affiliation of sport of the school. So it just worry. I don't know. The whole thing just makes me worry that college football is going to break off and is going to be its own professional league, and it's going to be about the play on the field, which is not what it's supposed to be about. It's supposed to be about everything else, which makes it great.
I just don't want it to be the NFL, and I love the differences. People have always asked me, what is my favorite thing to watch or what is my favorite thing to cover? It's college football for me. And then it might be college basketball after that, and I really like the NFL, but there's just a certain business feel to the NFL that removes some of the charm. And we've watched last year as some of that charm has left the college game. So I still am hopeful that the youthful feel of college athletics won't be lost and replaced by everybody sort of being, I got to get what's mine, and this is a professional setting, and I'm a pro, and, part of the charm, too, as a media member interviewing college kids is, like, they're different interviews than NFL and professional players because they aren't as tuned into kind of their corporate, like Jaden Robinson's coming on later in the show, and I get the impression I'm talking to like a college senior. I don't feel like I'm talking to a guy who's in his sixth year in the NFL who isn't going to really say anything because or tell us what he really thinks because He's afraid it's going to hurt, you know, a potential endorsement interview if he says the right, wrong thing. And I don't want the game to lose that. And then the other part is, I don't like all the movement. I hate it. I liked when we could watch a young player come into a program, play a little bit, and then we could go, ooh, that guy's going to be really good in 2 years. Let's see what he blossoms into. And we've lost that now because there's so much movement. We're not really getting to watch and appreciate like what Aiden Chiles has become. And we're not getting to see sort of a player blossom, or, you know, you got to go, okay, where did that guy end up? You know, where is he playing now? You know, I do hope like some of what Debbie Spander was talking about with, you know, the contracts and things like that could maybe help alleviate that a little bit. But I also don't want to be naive because, you know, look, we're in a capitalist society, and the market for a college quarterback or a linebacker or a running back is what it is. And the market doesn't lie. And I don't want to stand in the way of another person who is entitled to go earn what the market commands them. I'm not going to begrudge that person for following, you know, that their dream, or following, you know, what their brain and their advisors and their parents tell them what to do. I mean, that's no different than, you know, like yelling at high school kids who choose a different school because they think it's a better fit for them. I mean, so I'm interested to see a little more structure here. And I'm also interested in how that might benefit not just the schools and not just the athletes, but the game itself. Big Splash coming up.